Ready?
Yes.
Hi, I'm Olivia.
And I'm Jay.
And welcome to Highbrow Theater.
A podcast where we analyze plays.
So you don't have to.
Haha.
And I'm sounding nice with my fancy new mic that I bought on the internet for $27.
You didn't get yours behind the Chuck E. Cheese?
I traded my Chuck E. Cheese tokens for a brand new microphone. I've been saving them for years.
I have this thing where I might have already said this already. Probably not going to include this either. But when I'm talking with someone, I like picture them talking to me. Like right now, I'm like bird's eye view above you, and I'm like, she's sitting here, and her computer's right there, and she's got her mic over there, and she's saying words to me.
That's you should include that because I don't think that that is typical.
Really?
Yeah, I
Okay.
fully have never done that.
But also, my memory is very much in pictures.
Oh, that's right. Like you
Like,
remember, you have photographic memory almost.
yeah. I don't, not in the sense of,
Remembering
I
every
think,
detail, but you do remember shows, yeah.
like Cam Jansen. But yeah, so I guess that's how I think in visuals.
Yeah.
Like, that's what.
That's really interesting that you do that.
But,
Wow, you're learning
like,
cool things about you.
thank you. I mean, that wasn't, whatever. Okay. Did you? Ooh, what was I gonna say? You know what?
Did I get into a car accident today? I sure did.
Oh my God.
I was driving to work this morning, and I was getting off of the highway, and I was getting onto like from the highway to like a main like city road. And I hit a patch of ice and lost control and ran into the like barrier that keeps you from falling off the highway.
Oh my
Like I was up in the air.
God.
Yeah, it was really scary. I pulled over, I sobbed for 10 minutes, and then I went into work and I worked for 8 hours.
The American dream, baby.
The American dream.
Oh, that's so scary. So you're unscathed, I assume.
Yeah, I'm totally fine. But that's literally my worst nightmare is like dying in a car accident, so I was absolutely terrified. But I'm fine. Knock on wood.
That's fair. Yeah,
Everything's good.
you survived. You're here. Remember
I'm
that
here.
next time.
And I just have to be careful when driving on snow.
Yeah, also, but it also sucks. Just like, it's not your fault. Like, snow's a bitch,
Yeah,
especially
it is.
ice. Ice can go to another circle of hell and
Yeah, it's
melt.
really like we shouldn't even make people drive when it's snowing. We should just cancel everything.
I know. Or make everything come to us. I want to
Yeah,
be
but not from
Wally.
like people who have to drive from like drone.
Oh yeah, maybe I'll invest in Amazon so they can get that
You know what Amazon needs is more money.
going.
Well, what's new with you? Anything?
Let me think.
Other than
Not
having a photographic memory?
particularly. Oh, got my Blue Apron today. Made some pretty good chicken thighs.
Fine.
Has a lot more more fat on there, if you know what I mean. They got thick thighs make my meals, you know what I mean?
Wait, I thought you were a vegetarian. Are you not doing that anymore?
No, because I was looking it up. I was like, I'm having this and this. And then somebody was like, you're not getting the proper nutrients. Like, oh, got it. So I just slowly went back into it. I'm not really doing red meat, but
Gotcha. But just protein.
yeah. All right, so this play.
Should we talk about the play?
Yes, it
I'm
is.
excited about doing this play.
I know it is so, I don't want to say nuts, but it's like nuts. You know what I
Yeah,
mean?
it's really cool. I've never read this, and I've also never seen an episode of The Simpsons ever. Because when I was little, I really wanted to watch it, and I had this one friend who she like loved The Simpsons, and her dad like let her watch it, but they were otherwise like really religious, which is weird because The Simpsons is like not an appropriate show. So I would like hear about it, and I'd be like, "Mom, Dad, can I watch The Simpsons?" And they were like, "Absolutely not." But I feel like The Simpsons like lives in like the zeitgeist of like people our age, maybe people older than us, but people our age like know and like my boyfriend loves The Simpsons. Do you like The Simpsons?
I don't not like it. It's just, sorry, I don't want to. It's like a beloved, like 30-year thing. I don't want to go shitting on it.
I
But
wouldn't.
like, it's just not, it doesn't resonate with my funny bones.
Yeah, that's totally fine. Some, yeah, you just maybe don't vibe with it. I don't Yeah, I don't like really know that much about the humor of The Simpsons because I was never allowed to watch it. But I think people like my parents' age who were like more American almost like maybe like the generation younger than my parents because my parents are a little bit older. And they weren't just like watching cartoons. Not that, but it's like a different kind of cartoon, you know. It's like an adult cartoon. So I guess I'm people from like 40 to 50. Like ages 40 to 50, I think really like watched and liked this show.
That is true. Yeah, I grew up with it. Also, for context, the show is called Burns, subtitle, A
Yeah,
Post Electric Play.
it's called Mr. Burns. And the reason there's a character, if you know The Simpsons, there's a character in The Simpsons called Mr. Burns. And The Simpsons is a really important part of this play, kind of. Like, I was totally fine understanding it, not having seen an episode, but. It uses The Simpsons as a cultural example, which we'll talk about.
Yeah, Mr.
Okay.
Burns is like the top person who is in the wrong.
What?
Like he's capitalism,
Oh, yeah, I see.
which trickles into this too.
Yeah, it does. Well, anyway, would you like to tell us about our playwright?
Of course, it is one Anne Washburn. Bow, 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 bow. So her birthday is MIA. But I think she looks like a Virgo.
Does she have long brown hair?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I
She
love
also
that
just
idea.
looked humble.
Yeah, she looked like she's thinking a lot.
Yeah, like if you gave her a compliment, she'd like, but your sweater is really, you know.
She's like apologizing like every 4 seconds, yeah.
Anyway, enough assumptions about this woman. Let's get into the cold hard facts. So there's not a ton of information on Anne Washburn, but she's not like world renowned A-list playwright. So
Should be.
I
I
know
don't know
there
any of
was
her
a
other stuff, but this play is remarkable in some of the things that it does, and it's really positive.
This play, we read it for my intro to theater class.
Yeah, like that's
Like, it's kind of great.
yeah, it's like it's definitely belongs to be held, like it should be held in that esteem, I think.
We're rooting for you.
Yeah, we're rooting for you, Anne.
She received her Bachelor of Arts from Reed College in Portland and then got her MFA from NYU.
Wow.
I know, isn't that just the way?
I wonder how many NYU alumnus have we talked about in the show because I feel like it's been quite a few.
Yeah, really.
I know, I think Tony Kushner went to NYU. I think maybe what's his name? Cut that out. Arthur Miller.
I'm just gonna cut into you laughing, saying his name for no reason.
No, don't actually keep the whole thing in because people need to know that I'm flawed. Otherwise, they
Okay.
won't be able to tell.
Wait, I'm confused. So do you want me to keep that in or not?
Yeah, you can keep it in.
Okay.
Anyway, continue about her.
Okay. In 2007, she was one of, I think, 175 people to receive the Guggenheim Fellowship.
Whoa.
So, their requirements are for artists, quote, who have demonstrated exceptional capacity for productive scholarship or exceptional creative ability in the arts.
That sounds
So,
great.
basically, like, you're pretty rad. Here you go.
Here's some money. I don't know anything about the Guggenheim other than that it's a museum and that I watched a documentary about the guy who designed their font. He's like, I had to make a font that was extremely Guggenheim. And he was a really cool designer and he like made this font that like matched the build. I don't know. That's all I know about the Guggenheim.
Stay for the Patreon, and then we'll talk about the
We'll learn about the Guggenheim once and for all.
Guggenheim together
Yeah,
on Google Slides. Her plays have been produced in so many places. Whoa, like the Soho Repertory Theater, Washington, D.C. Studio Theater, the London's Gate Theater, and the Almeida in London, which, if you remember, is where we saw Machinal.
it is. The Almeida, is it Almeida or Almeida? I don't actually know. I'm not British.
Almeida.
Almeida. I'm deciding that the American pronunciation is Almeida.
Almeida.
And that is where Uzumaki and all. It's a really cool theater.
Yeah. And it's also where my script came from.
That's where my script came from, too. Well, you know what? I bet one photocopy of this script is just floating around. Oh, but you have the paper copy, don't you?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, I had a digital. Sometimes it's funny because, like, you'll trade PDFs of a play that's unpublished with someone, and they'll have like the same watermarks because they were scanned from like the same script 40 years ago by some professor. And you're like, oh, we're all reading because this one guy scanned it finally.
She had 18 produced plays, including Mr. Burns. And of the list, my favorite title is The Communist Dracula Pageant.
Yeah, that's a great name for a play. And I want to see it.
I do too. I would like to see it.
I would like to see it.
We love Monique. This is a Monique Stan podcast.
Whatever you've heard, know that that's what it really is.
Yeah. So let's go to the play, Mr. Burns. So it premiered at the Woolly Mammoth Theater in Washington in 2012. And it was also, she constantly reworked it between the shows.
Yeah, she mentions in the, like a note in the front of this script that Jay and I both have the same copy of, even though I didn't purchase it. Don't tell anybody that. But she has a note that says that this play was like heavily developed in workshops. Like even some of the dialogue is verbatim from these workshops she did with actors. So I can see this being, this play is so complicated that I can see it being like a group. It kind of feels like a devised piece in some ways. Mm-hmm. Like the last part, the last scene.
Yeah.
It's like fascinating and very unique, but it also reminds me of every devised theater piece I've ever seen.
Read it them. We'll get to, that was a sneak preview of talking about the collaboration and workshopping that we'll be discussing later.
I jumped the gun. This is why I need to read your notes too.
Oh my God. The director of the premiere was Steve Cawson, who before signing on confirmed with several lawyers that the play fell under fair use.
So what does that mean?
Just that they wouldn't get sued for using other material.
Oh, I see. I wonder how, because this play has so many,
maybe it's names.
It says names, and it also like says lyrics to actual songs, but I guess they're just singing it. They're not playing the actual licensed song.
Yeah, and some guy, I should know his name. Oh my God. There was a composer for the show, and then I think he wrote those or like made, fixed it and tuned like, it for the show.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that has anything to do with the legality.
That's very fascinating.
It had wildly different critic reactions, and it had 1 star, 5 star, and everything in between. Which I do see it. Yeah, it's very, very divisive.
I can see, here's the thing is like, there's certain people that you take to the theater and like, and this isn't, I don't mean this in a condescending way, but like they'll see something that's not a traditional play and they'll be like, I don't get that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just because they're, it's not like a, this person's like dumb thing. It's a, the like, I don't know, that this person isn't used to theater that's different.
Yeah.
Like I've seen a lot of weird shit. So like I like weird shit now, but if you've seen a lot of weird shit, I can see you not liking this. And it's not about like, oh, they don't get it. Like they don't actually get it. It's just like, I don't know. You have to develop a taste for weird shit.
Yeah. One step. I feel like that's Americans and K-pop.
Yeah, you're right. You have to develop a taste for K-pop.
Yeah. And then you're like, oh, Lisa, or whatever.
Stan Luna,
that's it. And then with a 2-minute fan cam underneath.
Yes. They're always replying to like Joe Rogan tweets. They're like, okay, but Stan Luna.
That's how it should be. But in the review world, the co-creator and showrunner of The Simpsons, Mike Reese, in his memoir, saying that the play and the playwright failed because the production was not like The Simpsons in that it was, quote, grim, pretentious, and dull, which, like, go off with your opinions or whatever, but I'm just find myself more defensive of minority writers.
I agree, because when people discard something that's written by a woman, you want to, like, be like, wait a second, let's like give it a second look because you might be wrong. I do agree. I mean, this play is grim. It's not a like play that's, it's not a happy play. But I would argue that it's not pretentious at all because it, the thing that it, the language that it uses is like language of like the common people. Like The Simpsons is a show that like every, like, I don't know, like every regular family watched, you know,
the average American.
Yeah. It's like, not only are they the representation of the average American family, like in their depictions, which they are, The Simpsons is supposed to be like, oh, it's The Simpsons, like this every family. But it's also that like everybody watched this show. So it's appealing to like, I don't know, like a collective subconscious that like belongs to like a lot of people. It's not like this, like this could be a play where they do this with Shakespeare. And that would be the worst. But because they do it with The Simpsons, like, I don't know, they're saying like, oh, this is worthy of like, we're worthy of examining the phenomenon of like our attraction to this media. Like it's not dismissing The Simpsons. I don't know. Does that mean it's not pretentious? No. It's certainly not dull. It's very interesting.
I just think he was going in with like a magnifying glass because he had such a strong connection to the source material.
Yeah, but it's not supposed to be like The Simpsons. In fact, I would say it's supposed to be exactly opposite of The Simpsons, which I think it like achieved. Mm-hmm. This is coming from someone who's never seen the show, but like there's a vibe to it.
Yeah.
I know enough. I know enough from existing in the world to be like, oh, The Simpsons is like a really funny, subversive show that like takes risks, but it's about like making you feel good. And this show is not that. And they don't have to like coexist. Like they can be different. And I just talked for like 10 minutes, but it's fine.
I know it was deep because it took me a minute to understand it.
I'm going to put them now for the rest of the time.
No, it's so insightful. I got the brawn, you got the brains. That's how this shit goes.
You got the beauty.
I got the beauty, you got the brains. Together, we're two idiots.
We're two halves of a whole.
That was from the very first episode.
Is it? Wow. Yeah. See, I should write Mr. Burns, but it's about Fairly Odd Parents.
Cosmo and Wanda.
SpongeBob would actually be interesting.
Oh, that would be so, you know, but that's, you know, that's not what we're on right now. We're getting sidetracked. Mr. Krabs. I got sidetracked again.
I'm going to email Anne Washburn. Anyway. Anne, have I got an idea for you?
Annie, get your pen. Nope. Okay.
No, that was funny. I was just giving you space to
talk. Mr. Burns was nominated for a Drama League Award for Outstanding Productions, so you know that it was at least good.
Or it was at least fascinating, you know, which like is all that a play kind of needs to be, you know, like I feel like if something is boring, like that's, you've totally lost someone. But if something is at least fascinating, even if a lot of people hate it, like at least someone made something interesting, you know?
Yeah. Look at Iggy Azalea.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. I'm glad that made sense. So some of the other, oh, speaking of having it with other shows, some of the other shows she was considering doing it about were Friends, Cheers, and MASH, which is wild because they're all so different.
They're all, and they appeal to different, like, I keep saying the word zeitgeist because I just learned what it means. But then, and I don't even know if I'm using it correctly, but people will understand. Like, it appeals to the different zeitgeists of like different kind of like groups of people. Like if it were Friends, it would appeal to like women between the ages of like 19 and like 44.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
It would appeal to like my parents. And if it was MASH, it would appear to like a different group of people, right? But I feel like she chose The Simpsons because it appeals to like the common American man.
Yeah. It does have the most broad, because like everyone knows it and everyone's been on it. Like even if you're 2 years old, you know, you're quoting Maggie lines.
Yeah. And for a certain time, it was such a dominant, like that was the show for so long.
Yeah. As it, like a gazillion Emmys.
Yeah.
All right. So this next few things to say are crazy. So buckle up, keep your thinking cap on, and let's go. So to drum up the concept, she rented a workshop area for a week in a bank vault underneath Wall Street.
What?
I know. This gets even crazier.
What? How did she
I don't know.
What string do you have to pull?
I don't know. But just, this isn't even the tip of the iceberg. So it was, well, actually, yeah, it was. Okay, so it was in that bank vault that they finalized the idea that the performance in the final act would be based on the episode Cape Fear, the Simpsons episode Cape Fear, which was based on the 1991 film of the same name, which was a remake of the 1962 version, which was based on the 1957 novel, The Executioners. So that probably means something.
That's either just like proof of like exactly what Washburn argues kind of in the play, or it's just like the best coincidence ever. Yeah. Like a string of like other media that's like reinvented itself until it's unrecognizable. Because like if I watch this Simpsons episode, this is something that's crazy. Do you ever like hear someone quote something that's actually like something making fun of something else?
Do you have an example?
Oh, I don't have a good example. But like, for instance, if like on the Rugrats, like they did an episode that made fun of Indiana Jones, which I think they do, and say they had like, I don't know, they had like the big like boulder and it was rolling behind Tommy.
Oh, yeah.
Pickles. And then someone was like, oh, do you remember that Rugrats episode where that happened? And it's like they're referencing the Rugrats episode
that's
unrecognizable from Indiana Jones because that's what they know, because that's how media works.
Yeah.
If someone who's seen Indiana Jones would be like, no, they're referencing Indiana Jones. But you can't just pick up a reference if you don't know what it's from.
You just cracked the code, dude.
Yeah, I mean, that's what this play is doing, because like the act three, that's like the finished play 75 years later, we'll talk about this more. The finished play is totally unrecognizable from what we saw them doing earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like certain things have survived. I don't know. It's really interesting. I feel like people write their dissertation about this play. But also high schools do it sometimes.
The variety. We love a chameleon.
Can you imagine a high school production of this play?
No. I don't want
what
to.
What would it be like? They'd be acting their faces off.
I bet it would have a less serious undertone.
Yeah, it'd be sillier. They love the silly. Anyway, I'll talk again forever.
I also love that I said, do you have an example? And you said, no, I don't have a good one. And then gave me a good example right after that.
I was taught to not think of myself as intelligent.
Oh, the last thing. Okay. So a woman named Julie Grossman, don't know who she is, but she studied this play. She said about the second act, quote, that permissions and copyright have survived the apocalypse brings out the absurdity of owning the rights to artistic production and dialogue in the persistence of capitalism. So like, it's the end of the world, but people are still worried about like rights and money and
yeah.
things like that.
Yeah, it's totally real. And it's making that comparison. Yep. Don't have anything else good to say.
It's all right. You've met your quota in the past, not in a bad way. I'm just saying you have some very good thoughts, so not all of them need to be home runs.
You're right.
All right, hang on, you know what's coming. This play has everything. Homer, Marge, Bart, Lisa, Maggie, Yellow Dan Cortez.
He would be yellow. I need to say something though, because what you just did is doing the thing. You're referencing a SNL.
Oh my god.
And if someone like say, like we have a couple listeners in Germany, which is really cool. Maybe it's just one person. I think it's actually two people because it's two different cities.
Yeah.
I'm not tracking you. I just have to do that.
We have analytics.
Yeah, it's the analytics. Anyway, I don't know a German person's familiarity with SNL. Maybe they watch it. I don't know. But maybe if you're a German person or someone in another country or even an American who hasn't seen SNL and they're like, oh, that's a thing my podcaster Jay does. You know what I mean? Like they wouldn't know it's from SNL, which is what this play is talking about, like the evolution of media and references.
Okay, thanks a lot, because literally every single thing I watch from now on, I'm going to be thinking about that.
Yeah, I think you can usually tell when it's happening because usually like a movie or TV will like call attention to a particular moment. And you might be able to be like, oh, that must be a reference to something, because it maybe will like kind of fall flat and not be funny, because sometimes you can get away with a reference joke not being funny as long as people are like, oh, I get the reference. It makes me feel smart.
Is that like when people make cameos in their own stuff? Or maybe like the writer, like my mind went to Stephanie Meyer was had a little cameo in Twilight.
Yeah, exactly. And she can get away with saying her line like with bad acting, which she did. Like you can, well, I don't even think she acted in actually.
She didn't say a word. She did not say a word. It was just in the
Whatever. I don't
background.
know who I'm thinking of. There's some, whatever, some writer who was in their thing and they like said a line and it sounded bad. That could be any number of things. We give permission her not being an actor because we're like, oh, we know her. So it's like a reference is like we make exceptions for them because we're fascinated with like things connecting, I think.
Yeah, it almost brings a sense of comfort because like things make sense.
You're like, oh, I get it. I get
Yeah.
the theory.
So you can
Yeah.
be like, you're proud of yourself. You can
Yeah.
take a
You
deep
feel good
breath.
when you get a reference because you're like, oh, I made it. Like I'm in. I know the stuff.
Yeah, it's and it's such a huge deal when someone's like, oh, what's that person from? And everyone's like, oh my God, well, they were in
And someone
this, and then they,
knows.
yeah, and then it's
Oh
like,
my
yes,
God.
that's it.
We have you ever played that game where it's like you have to like connect to actors?
Oh yeah, 6 Degrees of Kevin
Yeah.
Bacon.
Like that's basically just a game of like people trying to impress each other with how many movies they know.
Oh my God, oof. If you live your film major life, but not everyone has seen like the 1932 version of Nosferatu.
Oh my God,
All
it's you know what it always is? People are always like, they were both in Kramer versus Kramer. I'm like, I've
right.
never seen Kramer versus Kramer. I know that Meryl Streep was in it. I know that a lot of other famous people were in it, but
She won one of her three best actress
yeah, and I don't know what it
trophies
is.
from that movie.
I don't know what it is, and I don't know what it's about, okay? So, I want to stop hearing about it. Oh, we're really derailing. This might, I think, one, this is our best episode, and two, we're also derailing quite a lot more.
But that's okay. It helps us relate with the audience. We're
Yeah, I
people
agree.
too.
Should I do my little synopses?
Yes.
Okay, I'm gonna take a drink first.
Okay. How dare you hydrate?
How dare I?
I've been taking drinks this whole time.
So, I'm going to do a synopsis of Mr. Burns. At this point,
Yes.
it's hard. Again, I've been lately not writing down my synopsis because I'm like, it'll sound better if it just comes to me. So, if that's true, I don't know. This play is, it's three acts, and you almost have to explain it as a three act because they're like, it's an evolution that is not a linear plot, but it happens through time, if that makes
Yeah,
sense.
they're
And which doesn't.
like years apart.
Yeah, and it doesn't make sense really unless you read or see the play, which you should.
For sure.
You can reach out to me and I'll send you the PDF.
If
Dramatist Play Service, shut your eyes.
you heard that, no, you
No,
didn't.
you didn't hear that. You can't prove anything. Don't go through the download folder on my computer. Okay,
The zip files I have on
but I'm
backup.
deleting them. But my point is, so there's three acts and they take place. One takes place in, quote, the near future. Act two takes place 7 years later, and act three takes place 75 years later. So in act one, we've got a group of people. They're like huddling around a fire, sort of clearly like the apocalypse, like something really catastrophic has happened. These people are in a group around this fire, and we find out later that it's actually like a series of nuclear explosions. They're sitting around a fire and they're trying to piece together what they remember from a specific Simpsons episode, which you said, what is it called? Cape Fear?
Cape Fear.
Cape Fear. Like they're just like trying to help each other and they want to know like every line. Like they're going line by line. They're like, what's the next line? What does he say? What does Homer say? Whatever. And they go through and there's this group of them, and then this guy approaches and they all like pull out guns and weapons and shit. And they're like, who are you? And he's like, oh, I'm Gibson, I'm this guy. And they basically like pat him down, search him for weapons, and he has an atlas and he has a list of names and they all have a list. Oh, I'm being really confusing about this, aren't I?
I mean,
He
I
has an
don't think
atlas, he has a
so.
map of the United States, and they're all excited about that. And then everybody has a list of names. So they ask him, they're like, oh, here's my list of names. Here's K for Catherine. And they go through this list of names and everyone has it. And that's their way of checking up because something catastrophic has happened. Everybody keeps track of other people. And that's like all the information we get in Act One, basically. And then Act Two, it's the same group of people 7 years later, plus a few, minus a few, and they're rehearsing a play. And the play is this same episode of The Simpsons. And they're trying to get like every detail right, and they're trying to remember the lines. And we find out that basically they have a theater company where they purchase remembered lines from other people who are surviving the apocalypse, and they use them to put on these plays. Like these Simpsons episodes have become like currency because they're like the only source of entertainment in this post-apocalyptic world. And at the end of Act Two, a bunch of people come in and start shooting at the players, and there's some sort of conflict. And then in Act Three, there's these like scary Simpsons people that are like a cast of a new play 75 years later, and they perform this like frankly nightmarish like opera that's stitched together from like the plot of The Simpsons, dialogue of The Simpsons, song lyrics, things that previous characters have said earlier in the play, and it's all like mashed together. And this like very, it's very unnerving to read. I cannot imagine watching it.
a high school.
It scared me. I think it's supposed to. Yeah, but anyway, it scared me, and that happens. And then at the end, there's like a big burst of light, and you see this guy. He's like pedaling a bike, and it's like powering all of the lights in the theater. Because I didn't say this before, but like, there's part of the thing with this nuclear winter is that there's no electricity until this moment.
There's a post-electric play.
It's a post-electric play. So that's my synopsis. It's like, because in many ways, it's like a play of images. Like, it doesn't really matter who these people are. It matters like the image of them all doing something, but not in like a direct way. It's in the way, because like the characters, like we get a little bit of character and we can tell that they're like whole people. They're not symbols necessarily. They kind of are, but they feel like, I don't know. It's not a Brecht character who's, he's like, I am the writer and I represent all writers. Like, it's not that, but it's like people that you could recognize. Oh God. Okay. Do you want to ask any questions or say anything? Cause I've talked a lot. I'm really sorry.
Are you, you had to synopsisize the whole play.
Well, yeah, you're right. I just synopsisized the play, and oh, I guess what I was saying is that it's just a really hard play to do that with, which is cool. Cool to be like, oh, I'm challenged by this play.
I say this all the time. I really just want to be the neurons in the brain that were thinking of this. Well, I've never said that before in my life. I don't know why.
No, I mean, you said something somewhere that you're like amazed that people write like really cool stuff. But I think you'd be surprised, like in any person, like what art you would come up with if you like felt like free from judgment. This is the sort of thing that it's like, it's really weird and it's really cool. But like everyone, I've thought about stuff like this before, and you know, I've been like, oh, like what would happen if there was no electricity? Like, obviously you think about that.
Yeah.
But like, you have to believe, like Anne Washmer believed, like, you know what? I could write something really cool about this and I can actually do it. And she did it. And we're all like, wow, we couldn't have thought of that. But like, we could have mm-hmm. thought of something interesting. And I think this is just like a little sidebar to people that are like struggling with their art, is like, just because there are really great things doesn't mean that you can't make a great thing that's different.
And there's always such a, people are obsessed with someone doing something that they, well, I guess, for example, if like a little like toddler painted this like really really well done knockoff of Starry Night, it's like, whoa, he did that? No way.
And you're like, well, I can't do that and I'm older. But it's like, well, maybe you'll do something else.
Yeah, but do you really think you were like, what is, never mind. I was trying to string together a thought about being older and like move along. We'll move on.
Okay, can I pause? I'm gonna go into my closet because my family is being loud.
Yes.
I used to always come into my closet whenever I like threw a fit or needed to cry. So now every time I come in here, I'm like plagued with like bad memories.
Oh my God.
This was my like, which is actually really funny if you think about it. Imagine like a 4-year-old kid like throwing an absolute fit and then hiding in a closet. My mom would be like, are you going to come out? And I'd be like, no. I'm in my closet. Like, why not just my room?
Do you want that in?
If it seems like it fits tomorrow, you keep it.
I just wanted it by itself. That's going on the Patreon.
The Patreon.
Well, no, we need to have at least one afterthought.
Yeah.
So I see you wrote down that pop culture is currency. I think we discussed that already, honestly.
Yeah, we did talk about that. We talked about people trying to impress each other by knowing pop culture and how that like means something.
And I think that's, we also talked about it being comfort. Wow, we really touched on our notes before we even read them.
I know, that's crazy. We're so smart.
I know. Your notes. Those are all yours.
All six of them, baby.
All six. There's a seventh one started, but not finished. We're talking about something that we can see and no one else can.
Something that's in front of our eyes and nobody else will ever have access to it.
This is definitely our best episode.
Yeah, I think so too. I think we're being really funny.
Okay, one more serious thought.
One more serious thought. Yeah, okay, I have one.
Yes.
A question to ponder, because it's not, everything else I have written in the notes is like really depressing and I want to end on like an upper note. What do you think will become like the myths of our time? Like, we don't know anything about like the ancient Greeks, right? But we're like, oh, but we know about like Oedipus. They must have all loved Oedipus. Which is funny because like ultimately like Oedipus is one of a bunch of plays that didn't survive, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So like we're like, oh, all Greeks knew Oedipus, which maybe they did. Maybe it was like really influential. I think it actually was. There were also other, they had other things that they enjoyed and talked about and referenced with each other that like we'll never know about. So we think that they all loved Oedipus. Like imagine if 200 years, maybe longer, 1,000 years, and let's assume humans are still around, which they're not, but if they are, they come and they look and they find like a DVD of like Shrek.
Oh.
So every human being on this planet loved this movie.
Because they had it, so it must be.
They had it, so they must have loved it. Where it's like, they're not going to know about like Schindler's List, they're going to know about Shrek.
Oh my god.
So they don't know like the heights and the lows of us. They're categorizing us as something. So if you could choose anything to categorize humankind by at this moment, what would it be?
My first thought was Britney Spears and Justin Timberlake's jean outfit at the VMA.
Oh, that's such a good one. I can't even think of one because that's the only right answer. I would like to thank you all seven of you, for listening. If you want to keep up with us, you can follow us on Twitter at Highbrow Theater. If you like the show, or if you didn't like the show, please subscribe to it.
Yeah.
And tell your friends about it.
That's word of mouth. That's like the currency, Mr.
Yeah. I know if you're a theater kid, someone who likes theater, you must be. And you must know other people that like theater because theater is an art of community. So let people know if you like the show.
Yeah.
And then maybe we'll be able to do cooler stuff.
And also to our haters, if we have haters, we're still iconic. Harry Iconic Jr. All right, that's us. Where'd that even come from? I'll be in editing and be like, oh, that's silly. And then I'm like, wait, what did I?
Where did I? Anyway.
If you'd like to support our work, there's a link in the podcast description.
You can donate $1 so I can buy Jay a hamburger.
I guess I eat meat now. Okay. Now we I think we'll try now.
Now we should have that. Okay, ready?
Yep.
That was about a second off, but that's okay.
Ah, yeah, it's okay. It makes us vulnerable.
In time math, that's not that long.
But time math is so hard.
That's for the insiders.
Yeah, y'all know. If you IYKYK.
Okay, you ready to go?
Oh, yeah. Okay, bye.
Bye.